First of all, we called him Mimi.
Describe Mimi.
Well, Frank Neely was an extraordinary guy, but in one sentence, not possible to describe, because he was a grandfather, he was a father, he was a farmer, he was a businessman, he was an educator, he was an engineer. He was one of the youngest guys ever on the Atlanta Federal Reserve Board, on and on and on and on and on. So can't be done in one sentence, so I'll defer.
That was a run-on sentence, but that's okay. Eve, go ahead.
He was my grandfather. That was it. I do remember realizing that he was a significant person in the community well into my adulthood when I heard him speak. He was probably in his 90s, early 90s, at Georgia Tech, and I watched him push a helper aside and stand up at a podium and throw his shoulders back and speak. And I already had one child of my own, and I remember going, now I understand the magnetism of this man. Now I understand why that resume happened.
So, I think he was an inspiration to all of us. And he had a bunch of stories and a bunch of sayings, but just one, he says, if it's worth saying, damn it, stand up and say it.
Let's talk about how the Neelys even got to Georgia to begin with. It all started in Augusta?
Well, the first generation came in Baltimore, and ultimately Frank Neely's grandfather was a teacher kind of person as an individual, and was recruited to come to Augusta, Georgia, probably in the 1840s, maybe 18 or there about that, and was one of the founders of the Augusta Free Academy. And then from there, his son Benjamin Neely, that was John Neely, Benjamin Neely moved to Rome, Georgia, and founded the public school system there. And Benjamin Neely had 9 children after the Civil War, beginning in about 1867. My grandfather was the youngest of 9. Extraordinary family for the times, because there were 5 boys. 2 were engineers, 1 was a lawyer, 1 was a doctor, and 1 who was an insurance salesman was head of the Board of Education in Hapeville, Georgia. And in fact, there's a Neely school named for that brother. And the 4 girls, 1880s, 2 nurses, 2 doctors, or 2 nurses, 2 teachers, because they didn't go to college.
It was the time when your grandfather started working at Rich's that really kind of brings the story that we're talking about today together. What did he do at Rich's?
What didn't he do? He had every title possible, from general manager to chairman of the executive committee. But as one of those stories that I remember was that he would go to work at whatever time, but he wouldn't get to his office for an hour, because he would get out of his car and stop on every floor and talk to the people on every floor until he got up to the 5th floor where his office was. And even as when Rich's was still Rich's downtown, people would say, I remember Mr. Frank. He would stop at Notions every day. And so that connection with people, I think, is a piece that runs through in a pretty powerful way.
So, and we should mention, for folks who maybe haven't lived here for a long time, Rich's was the local iconic department store, which every city had at one time, is now Macy's. Explain for us then how his position at Rich's turned into helping found WABE-FM.
So the Rich Foundation was created out of Rich's money. And as the person who could pull that lever and his belief in public education and his close friendship with Miss Ira, whom we all remember quite well.
Ira Jarrell was the then superintendent of schools in Atlanta, and probably one of the first women superintendents. And frankly, there are not a lot of women superintendents of major cities around America today.
And also, at that time, he was chairman of the Federal Reserve Board for the Southeast for 30-something years, after which they said you can only be chairman for 2 years at a time. But as as that, he had a sense of the Southeast that very few. So he was aware of rural, and he was aware of cities. He was aware of the distance between places. So my guess is that he and Miss Ira started talking about this idea. And he pulled the lever on the Rich Foundation money that got it started. What Daniel was reminding me was that, you know, it was getting programming out across the state. I remember being at Dunwoody Elementary when my grandfather actually brought the first radio to the school. And it was probably, I want to say, like a foot and a half tall. It was black. It had kind of an angle on it. And hearing it in Dunwoody Elementary, which was so rural, there were 70 kids in seven grades. So this passion, we actually have newspaper clippings and things of his being honored by the Atlanta Board of Education. So this was a long-standing relationship. And because he was, one of the things I've learned as an adult was this was a man who was a long vision, long-term investment. But he did something that most of us don't know how to do, which is he knew how to leverage his resources, could be power, could be funds, could be network, in ways that actually made them happen.
We all know about the mindset of a lot of people in southern cities during this time about segregation, about mixing of the races. Did your grandfather at all talk about opposition or what people said to him in terms of, why do you want to do this, Frank? Why do you want to bring education as the meeting place for kids of different races?
I think there are two things very importantly to separate. One is the concept of broadening the educational base throughout the culture. I also think at 81 or 2 or 3, when he was at Rich's and the sit-ins began, that he was still not necessarily focused on this particular cultural change that was coming down the road. Our mother was there, but in a generational thing within the family, he wasn't there, and for somebody who totally grew up in a segregated society, he treated every African-American I ever knew with more or as much dignity as every white man he ever knew. So this was not a matter of humanity. This was a matter of where he was from culture.
He was behind the scenes. Like he would, like dad, so-called, I mean, just one of the stories is, well, you know, he didn't call him Daddy King. I can't remember exactly, but Martin Luther King's father, he would come and allegedly talk to him about he can't control his son.
But it's really two old men complaining about the young people.
Well, and I think Nathan's point is very well taken, which is that he was not anti. He was working towards something.
So that laid the foundation of kind of this idea that every child, no matter background, rural, urban, should have some kind of shared educational standard. And that's right. Where WADE came into the picture. Do you all remember hearing stories about kind of the nuts and bolts of how the station was founded? What did it take to get that idea broadcast?
I think it's, you know, we can only speculate, but I think basically, as we've said earlier, he and Miss Ira sat down. Rich's had its own internal communication system, its own internal radio system. Georgia Tech had WGST, which was its radio station, and Uncle Frank and Miss Iris, Miss Iris said, okay, we can do this and get it out to the schools.
Well, I think the key that made it happen was he had access to the funds.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever.
Or he had the vision too.
Well, he was able to bring the resources.
Eve, you are the family archivist, and I understand that just recently you found photo albums, scrapbooks.
This morning, I went to look and found a series of articles. My grandmother, I think, was a pretty archivist person.
She was the archivist.
The article is called Atlanta Schools Now Have Reading, Writing, spelled R-I-T-I-N, Arithmetic with an R, and Radio. And there are photographs of kids in front of WABE microphones or in school classrooms listening. And that's one article written.
What's the date on that?
I'm looking to see. I don't see. Well, the other article is dated September 9th, 1948. September 9th, 1948. There's a picture of Frank Neely and of Miss Ira Jarrell. And I understand your David Barisoin has a photograph of a man in front of a microphone on his desk, and he had no idea, but it's Frank Neely. So there are four pages of clippings. Studio ceremonies dedicate the school station. Telegrams and orchids were in order yesterday for WABE-FM as the new educational radio station broadcast its dedication ceremonies from its City Hall studios. Today represents a culmination of many years of planning and striving to bring to the girls and boys of the Atlanta area this, the latest educational aid in the teaching field.
When you all look at scrapbooks and you see these old clippings of your grandfather, obviously you grew up with him, you know, but when you see his role in not just bringing WABE to the airways, but his philosophy. You mentioned how the importance of respect. When y'all look at these pictures and you see Mimi, as you call him, what goes through your mind?
It was not until I was probably in my late 40s or early 50s that I began to reflect on what growing up around him was. He was just a grandfather. Yeah. Took me fishing. Taught Nathan how to drive a tractor, shoot guns.
He took me once to the neighbors to go check on the guys, the neighbor, Mr. Duncan's corn crop. And we drove into the field and he came back with this little keg thing. And I didn't understand that Mr. Duncan was the bootlegger. And I actually still have a jar of that.
And I just want to say a couple of substantive things, because I think he probably influenced a lot of my practice as a superintendent of schools. I didn't link this back to WABE, but in Orange Public Schools, which is an all-black, the lowest income district in New Jersey, I got a local access TV station started there. And then in the next district I went to, I also got a local access TV station.
All right, let me just add one thing about my grandmother, our grandmother, who was this sort of silent partner, supporting him, protecting him, encouraging him. Again, recently in my archivist role, I came across a bio of her and found out that she had been active around the state in women's and children's health and education issues. But they were a team in a way that was extremely powerful. And, you know, she didn't take the credit, but there's a story that, so for him to get out of Georgia Tech, she used to write his English papers. So we need Ray Schlesinger, whom we called Bama, to be in the story.
So from those days when the broadcast was about geometry and English to today, where at any given week, 500,000 people around the Atlanta metro area will tune in to hear about local, national, international news and have discussions about that. What do you think he would think of what WABE is today?
I think he would still be concerned about how it was impacting the schools. I don't think he would particularly view public radio the way that we do today as an information and education medium for us. He would be much more concerned about whether it was still working in the schools.
Daniel Parker, Nathan Parker, Eve Hoffman, thank you all so much for coming in and taking the time.
Thank you.
Thanks for giving us the opportunity to reflect on our legacy.
If you don't get in the water, you're never gonna learn to swim. He said a snake is just as scared of you as you are of him. He could tell by the moon when the fish would bite. Seems there was nothing that he didn't know. And as a kid I believed, 'cause Grandpa told me so.